Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, trusted for remodeling projects big and small. Ideas at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Ever since 2002, St. Louis's nighttime skyline has gone dim for the months of May and September. And that's for the birds, literally. During those months, the Gateway Arch keeps its night lights off to accommodate migration season for North American songbirds and waterfowl. We're talking about tens of millions of winged travelers flying across St. Louis skies. That comes with ample opportunity to see some of these migratory birds as they make their way along the Mississippi Flyway. Longtime St. Louis birder Matt Schomburger knows a thing or two about taking advantage of this moment, and he joins us today to talk about it. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And we have another Matt here for this conversation. Matt Barton is an urban conservation specialist with the St. Louis Audubon Society. Welcome to you too.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And we have asked for your notes about favorite bird sightings lately. And we heard from a Reddit user whose name is Slowtech, who says, "There's a heron rookery behind the Reliable Funeral Home at Vandeventer and Washington. Hundreds of great egrets and little blue herons, and I think maybe green herons, building nests in the cottonwood trees in the middle of the city and nowhere near a pond. Watching them fly in to roost as the sun starts to set is cool as hell. It may be toward the end of the season for them now, but probably still worth looking at." We also heard from Reddit user Honk and Wave 85, who says, "I had eight eastern goldfinches in our patch of black-eyed Susans the other day. I've never seen that many at once. They saw a bald eagle at the Army Depot in Granite last week as well." So these notes we want you to add yours to as well. Give us a call at 314-382-8255 to tell us what your best bird sighting was this year. Where did you go and what did you see? Again, that number is 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpr.org. So, Matt S., let's start with you. The descriptions that you heard of the birds that folks have been seeing, is that in alignment with what people will see during the fall migration series that they may not otherwise?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Certainly, the heron rookery will start to kind of break up. Those birds will start to disperse and leave. But, you know, the goldfinches, the bald eagle, all those things are birds that are going to either start showing up or they're going to start leaving. And this is common for this time of year in the fall.
Mm-hmm. And I think I spotted you, Matt B., smiling over there as I was reading some of those notes.
Yeah. Well, the rookery over here in the Central West End, it's pretty well known amongst birders because, like you said, it's kind of a peculiarity in the middle of St. Louis. A lot of those birds are probably going over to Forest Park. I see a lot of herons and egrets kind of flying that general direction in the evenings, it seems like. But it really is kind of one of those really cool areas in St. Louis where you can see some birds that you might not expect.
Mm-hmm. How many birds are flying over St. Louis right now, Matt?
Every year during spring and fall migration, we have tens of millions of birds that are passing over the area. And they don't really ever, you know, it's variable from year to year. They don't come at just one big time. A lot of times the pattern will kind of depend based on things like weather. And so it's variable from year to year. But, I mean, tens of millions of birds will be mm-hmm. coming through.
How many years have you been watching this autumn migration?
Yeah, let's see. I've been a bird watcher now for approximately 25 years, but certainly in the early stages, you're just trying to get used to things. And I didn't think I've truly understood migration times until I had already been bird watching for about 4 or 5 years, I would guess. So approximately 20 years altogether.
Yeah. We have Paul, who is calling from Jennings. Paul, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Hi, Elaine. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure, go ahead.
I was calling because I worked in Forest Park for a number of years right around the museum, the Art Museum on the Hill. I used to see bald eagles all the time, sometimes even nests in the park. I was walking through on my way to work one day from over at like Skinker Avenue, walking up the hill, and I actually saw one like in the golf course, was sitting on a table.
Oh, on a table.
That close. Yeah, I was that close to it. So it was just bizarre, and I see them flying around in the park all the time, eagles, bald eagles.
Mm-hmm. Do you
mention that?
How do you find your way, you know, to the park? Do you work near there? You know, have you observed any changes in how many birds you are seeing these days?
Well, normally it's like I see them like right around the fall, like right around in September or October and sometimes in the spring. Because I have to go to the park every day to get to my job. So, and I would see them, and even in the springtime, they'd be flying around the museum, the art museum.
Yeah.
The one on the hill.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so I started seeing them often, and a lot of them, mm-hmm. not just one, but several.
Thank you so much for calling, Paul. One of my colleagues here, Rachel Lippman, actually took a photo of a red-tailed, was it a red-tailed hawk, sitting on top of one of the parking sort of kiosks.
Oh, yeah.
And didn't realize it was there. So that was a moment of seeing, you know, a bird in a very urban setting. This migration that people are seeing, though, we are in an urban setting. Why does it happen at night? Is this specific to, you know, this kind of environment? Is this also what happens, you know, farther out in the country, Matt?
So my understanding with the nighttime migration is it's kind of two good reasons. One, it's cooler at night for the birds when they're moving, and they're generating a lot of heat energy by flying. So keeping them cooler is key. And then it helps them to avoid predators at some point as well. They don't have to contend with that as much. That said, a lot of the birds are using the stars to navigate by, which is why it's so important to have the lights off, like you talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. So the birds during migration are using celestial cues like stars and the moon to help them navigate. And whenever there's a lot of light pollution and the associated sky glow, that can disorient them and cause them to either, you know, veer off path or waste, you know, valuable energy while they're migrating.
Mm-hmm. So we had said also that in the introduction, it's been since 2002 that they've been turning the lights off. Does that mean that it sort of took that long for people to understand what the role of light pollution was in migration of birds?
So I think that it's education and knowledge is certainly a thing. I think the more and more people that in my line of work that I talk to about, you know, the issues facing birds and how light pollution can play into that, a lot of people, I think, just weren't aware. But now, you know, as this is gaining national, you know, movement and the conversation is growing, more people are aware and more buildings like the Arch are starting to take action as well.
Mm-hmm. One of the things about birds is also how they sound. Reddit user Charlie Cheswick 5 says they saw an eastern wood peewee in Forest Park. And I'd like to take a moment to appreciate the different calls of the eastern wood peewee. Here's one. And here is another much different vocalization from the eastern wood peewee. So is it difficult to sometimes, you know, identify bird calls when they sound so different? I mean, even the same bird.
Yes, absolutely. I would say any bird watcher or birder would tell you that learning to identify them by sound is one of the things that you learn later, or that you are never fully learning,
mm-hmm.
because that's the challenging one. And at least a peewee has a relatively recognizable call, but even so, as you pointed out, they have a lot of different vocalizations they make.
Yeah. Matt Barton, I understand that you came into birding during the pandemic and that there was a lot less sort of activity happening outside because people, you know, were just moving in different ways. As far as these sounds go, Did you have an opportunity to kind of hear more of these birds, you know, in the time you were learning how to do this activity?
Yeah, I mean, I think that listening, the pandemic definitely kind of cut down on some traffic as far as, you know, noise pollution and things like that, which is definitely helpful. As you start listening to birds more and getting more into birding, though, I think you also just start hearing them more often, just kind of because you're paying more attention. But yeah, I'd say that, you know, the pandemic in the sense that, you know, for outdoor causes like birding, it was really beneficial because, you know, there were more and more people trying to come out and, you know, find something to do in nature. Mm-hmm. And I'd always kind of been into birds throughout my life, but it really started taking off during the pandemic when I got my first pair of binoculars and just decided, you know, these are some pretty amazing animals and I want to learn a lot more about them.
Is there something that is unique about the sounds of fall migration, Matt? Is there something we should keep an ear out for?
So at fall, they're not doing as much of their songs or singing. Singing is about trying to proclaim territory and attract a mate. And so there's a lot less of that, but instead they're making what are often known as contact calls, contacting one another. And especially during migration, during the nighttime flights, the birds are making a lot of calls to each other as they're flying, potentially to say, like, here I am, where are you, if they can't see each other or whatever. And so that can be recorded too. I have never heard it myself, but there are a lot of folks that record those nighttime flights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's actually a pretty, it's a growing movement as well, where in fact there's a little bit of that work going on in St. Louis currently.
Oh.
But that's really kind of a growing field, and that's another place that technology is kind of coming into play because with artificial intelligence and things, people are starting to, you know, use those to pick out very minuscule sounds and recordings to help to identify birds and their calls.
And speaking of technology, I understand, Matt B., that you have captured a photo of a couple of waterfowl in your bird watching outings. And one is the American coot, which has a very unique look.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're pretty much a jet black bird. They've got a white beak, and they have a little white or a little spot on talk to my microphone. They have a little spot there that on their head as well. But they're a really distinctive bird. I've seen them before over at MoBot, so the Missouri Botanical Garden. So that's somewhere that you might see one. They're frequently around water. So
They're often described as a bowling ball with wings, which is wings and legs, which is very true because they are very round and plump.
Okay. Well, and we happen to have an American coot who can speak for itself. Here's what an American coot sounds like. So now associating that sound with a bowling ball with legs and wings is quite vivid. We also have the sound of another waterfowl that is coming through St. Louis during this fall migration. That's the gadwall. What is unique about the gadwall, Matt S.?
Well, so gadwall is a type of duck. There are many, many ducks that are going to be coming into the St. Louis area. So they're coming now down from the north. They're coming from Canada. They're coming from the northern states where they've been breeding and nesting. And now a lot of them are going to overwinter here in the St. Louis area. And, you know, we have the Missouri and Mississippi River confluence here. And so we have a lot of water areas that attract a lot of waterfowl. And gadwall is just... At last I heard, they are potentially the second most numerous duck in North America behind the mallard, which is, we all know the mallard with its green head and kind of brownish body for the males and all brown for the females. But gadwall are believed to possibly be the second most numerous, but it's always hard to know what the numbers really are.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and those, you can see gadwalls pretty frequently in Forest Park in the winter, I would say. A lot of times on our beginner bird walks in Forest Park in like the early parts of the year, like January, we'll see them over by like Steinberg Rink.
Mm-hmm. We need to take a quick break here, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Para Corporation, a general contractor seeking professionals who want to make a difference in the community. More at parac.com/careers.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation about the fall bird migration with Matt Barton and Matt Schamberger. We heard from Richard, who says, they're not rare in STL, but when I first saw a Eurasian tree sparrow identified on my bird camera, I looked at the map of where they lived and saw, as the name implies, it lives in Europe and Asia. I assumed it was a misidentification until I looked a bit more and saw it's found in those places, and then in America, only in St. Louis. It has a fun, although probably problematically invasive, and I guess that's the story of America, St. Louis story. So there are a lot of species of sparrows in the region right now. Are there any sparrows you're particularly interested in spotting this fall? Matt S? Matt B?
There's certainly a lot of different sparrows that will show up at this time of year. I just had a lark sparrow in Forest Park the other day, which is an unusual place to see a lark sparrow. Also, they're not super common in this part of Missouri. They're very common in west, kind of midwestern states like Kansas and Nebraska and stuff. Less mm-hmm. common over here in the eastern side. So to see a lark sparrow in Forest Park was fun to see. But yeah, there's going to be field sparrows showing up, white-throated sparrows showing up.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of the white-throated sparrows. They have a really kind of pretty song that they do, and it's just really nice during, the winter season, kind of picks you up on those cold days.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of that bird, we have a white-throated sparrow call. So that is not the white-throated sparrow's song. It is their call. Do they sing at all in the fall and winter, though?
Yeah, I won't embarrass myself trying to do an impression here on the air. But they have a really kind of like a kind of like that.
Yeah.
And they will sometimes sing that song when they're here. Again, it's not breeding season for them, but you can hear it. But especially towards the end of winter, in the mm-hmm. spring before they leave, they'll start singing that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So generally then, what is the difference between a bird call and a song?
My understanding is that the calls, again, are primarily just a way of a group of keeping track of one another. Like mm-hmm. sparrows are often in flocks. Sometimes they're in rather tall grass brush where it's hard for them to see one another, but by constantly making those little calls like we heard the recording of, they can be aware that their friends are around them at all times and they're not far away from each other.
Mm-hmm. When we started the introduction to this conversation, I talked about the arch, and Matt B., you've talked about some of the issues with light. St. Louis has been ranked in one study as the fifth most dangerous city during spring migration for birds and the sixth most dangerous city during the fall migration. I don't think it's something that would be chalked up solely to the arch. And you are, Matt, part of a program called the Lights Out Heartland program. Can you tell us what this program aims to do? And what it has to do with birds specifically?
Yeah, so Lights Out Heartland, that's the organization. It's it's open to states here in the Midwest. The Arch is part of that program, and that what it's encouraging partners to do is to turn off their lights and then during the month of September for fall migration. And then also there's a little bit of an educational component as well, where they're encouraged to spread, the word about why they're doing what they're doing. But as far as urban risk to birds, it's not solely light. A lot of the issue that comes up as well as glass. So birds get drawn into urban areas by light pollution and things of that nature. And then once they're, in an area where there's this developed infrastructure, the odds of them having a collision with a building go up.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the issue, of transparent glass where birds think they can don't realize it's there and try to fly through it and have a collision. But there's also the issue of really reflective glass, where it's reflecting the environment around them. They think perhaps they can fly to a tree that's nearby, but it's actually a reflection.
A reflection.
And hundreds of birds die in St. Louis every year, you know, from collisions with buildings mm-hmm. in just the small area that our program, which Matt also volunteers with, BirdSafe St. Louis, you know, we see hundreds of collisions a year between downtown St. Louis and downtown Clayton.
Mm-hmm. And the way that you see these collisions is by seeing the birds after they have struck the buildings, right?
Yeah, because oftentimes what will happen is a bird will hit a building and it just falls to, you know, the area underneath. Mm-hmm. And that's where our volunteers go out and we monitor around specific set of buildings to see, you know, what birds are, where are the birds hitting, what species of birds are hitting. And we document all of that information in a citizen science project.
Mm-hmm. And citizen science, I believe that that is one of the reasons, Matt, as you are interested in birding, and you're a retired bird keeper. You were at the St. Louis Zoo.
That's correct, yeah.
So what is the difference between, you know, experiencing birds at the zoo versus in the world, you know, outside, so to speak?
Right. Well, certainly at the zoo, the St. Louis Zoo is a wonderful place, and I've worked at a few other zoos as well. And every zoo tries its absolute best to keep animals in the most similar situations to where they would be in the wild. But it's, of course, it's not the same. You can't replace it. The idea that zoos can be an ark to save all the animals, zoos are doing their part, but that's just a fallacy. Like, you have to have the wild places for the birds to be. So birds in zoos still often act very similar. They have the same behavior, same songs, same things. But you often can't see them at the scale or the numbers that you can when you're just out and about in mm-hmm. the wild.
What is the biggest group of birds you have seen at one time, Matt?
So in the fall and winter, mm-hmm. blackbirds, and I use blackbirds as a general term because it includes red-winged blackbirds and grackles and a variety of different birds in the blackbird family, brown-headed cowbirds, for example, which truly have a black body and a brown head. But they often congregate in extremely large numbers, numbers in the millions. And I can recall a time going to Columbia Bottom Conservation Area, which is just a little bit north of here, and with another group of birders, and we collectively estimated that we were seeing multiple millions of blackbirds flying around together there up at Columbia Bottom. And that, for me, was the largest group I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd say probably similar, like big murmurations of birds. That's one for your Scrabble bang,
yes.
You know.
Murmuration, I love that. Now, as we close today's show, I'd like to do a little lightning round of audio and do it sort of quiz style. Can you identify this call?
Sounds like a nuthatch. Is it red-breasted nuthatch?
Yes, that's right. I feel like we need some kind of a sound effect to signal the win. What about the sound of this flock?
Well, it's geese.
Yeah.
To me, it sounds like greater white-fronted geese. But there are Canada geese that are going to migrate through, too. But that sounds like greater white-fronted geese.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or snow geese.
Yeah, could possibly be. Yeah.
Yes.
Geese are tricky.
Yeah.
Well, those tricky geese were snow geese. So another correct answer there. We heard from Callie-Ann, who says that chronic illness has taken away my ability to hike, but birding has filled that space beautifully. Whether I'm in my backyard or just looking out my bedroom window, it gives me a way to stay connected to nature and the earth. For each of you, what is it that made birding such an important part of your life?
Yeah, I think, you know, birds are a great way for people to connect to nature. And, you know, it's something that almost everybody has some sort of, you know, frame of reference to. And, you know, I just think that, you know, watching them out in the wild and seeing them, you know, lead their lives, you know, foraging for food, nesting, just all of the behaviors just make them really endearing animals and really great to be around.
And Matt, as in the last 30 seconds?
I just love that birds are around us all the time, whereas a lot of other wild animals can be difficult to see or find. Birds are just always there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Matt Schamberger is a longtime St. Louis birder, and Matt Barton is urban conservation specialist with the St. Louis Audubon Society. Thank you both for joining us, and happy birding.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.